Hello, my name is Malcolm Campbell. I'm from the School of Humanities at the University of Auckland. I want to do a short talk about populism in Australia and pose the question, does Australia have a history of populism? When we look around the world, we can see that populism's a hot topic in 2019. The rise of Donald Trump in the United States, more recently Boris Johnson in Britain, and a range of other world leaders are making us reflect on what populism is and why it seems to be having a revival in the early 21st century. When I think about Australian history, it's useful for me to distinguish between populism as a movement and what I'll call populist tendencies in Australian life. Australian history has long had populist movements. Through the 19th century, into the 20th century and beyond, at various times, political movements have emerged that have pursued a populist agenda. Movements that have advocated for a range of policies about Australian life have emphasised that the power of elites in Australia needs to be undermined or changed, and have advanced what we would call a popular agenda. At the same time, it seems to me that underlying Australian life is a strong sense of populist tendencies, a feeling that Australians lack power and that that ought to be addressed. And this is something that hasn't been sporadic, but exists at the heart of Australian life. In the talk today, I want to explain that difference between populist movements and populist tendencies and the way that this has played out in the course of Australia's history. First of all, though, what do I mean by populism? For me, populism is an appeal to the grievance that ordinary people feel, that they're overlooked, that they lack power, or that they lack recognition. And this has been something that's been a prominent feature of Australian life. We can see it as being associated with some specific people or movements or campaigns that have taken place across the 230 years or so since Europeans first occupied the Australian continent. As distinct from those sporadic movements, there are also these populist tendencies, firmly rooted in Australian history and culture, and which we'll go on and talk about. I think it's important when we deal with populism to try and escape presentism, not to just assume that the past was like today, when figures like Donald Trump ruled across the political scene. It's important that we bring a historian's perspective to our understanding of populism, that we try and historicise it and to understand it in Australia's own context. The first thing to say is that populism as a movement has long been present in Australian politics. I was travelling in rural Australia earlier in 2019, shortly before the Australian election, and across the countryside I saw posted on trees in the bush a large number of posters promoting Clive Palmer and his United Australia Party. Clive Palmer is a wealthy Queensland businessman who took the United Australian Party and campaigned in the Australian election for what I'd describe as a populist agenda. The posters featured Palmer set against a yellow background with the Australian flag in the background, in particular the Union Jack, emphasising Australia's British connections. Alongside Palmer's populist campaign was another one led by a well-known Australian politician, Pauline Hanson, the leader of the One Nation Party. Hanson's political slogan of emphasising One Nation featured posters with Trust Pauline as the background and Hanson again, her picture set against the Union Jack. Both Clive Palmer and Pauline Hanson appealed to a number of essential aspects of Australian life. They argued that what it was to be an Australian had been lost in the rapid change of the late 20th and early 21st centuries. They argued that nationalism needed to be at the forefront of Australian life, hence their emphasis on the flag. They used a nostalgia for a past that had been lost in Australian life, and especially in Hanson's case, played upon a xenophobia, which is a strong feature of Australian life, a fear of outsiders and of the change that outsiders bring to Australian life. Both campaigned very successfully during the course of the election, and their strength and achievements were greatest in the more remote parts of Australia. In Queensland, which is where both come from, their parties did relatively well in the 2019 election. Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party attracted 10.27% of the first preference votes in the Queensland Senate election, Clive Palmer's party getting almost 4%. In other words, somewhere between 1 in 6 and 1 in 7 Queenslanders voted for one of these populist parties in the upper house during the federal election earlier this year. And it shows that there was a market for their populist campaigns, that there was a constituency who felt that they were being excluded from decision making and who recognised something in their message about the need to give ordinary Australians a voice. There's some important characteristics to observe about the two campaigns. As I've said, both were Queensland-based. Pauline Hanson rising to prominence as a fish and chip shop owner in Ipswich, Clive Palmer as a very wealthy businessman. Both appealed to provincial audiences rather than to the cities or towns. It's no surprise that the posters I saw were in country areas. That's where both of the populist campaigns thought that they could convert people to their views, where they thought that people were most disaffected. Neither had a coherent political program. Neither ran on a clear set of policies about what Australia's future should be. Rather, it was more about what had been lost, about what was wrong with Australia, rather than providing concrete solutions for the future. And both parties portrayed themselves as outsiders, as representing persecuted Australians or Australians who didn't have a voice. They saw themselves as not part of the elite, not part of the Australian mainstream, but rather people who would enter the scene and bring about change on behalf of ordinary Australians. Other campaigns have existed during the course of Australia's history. If we think about the Depression years of the 1930s, and at various times during the 19th century, similar political campaigns enjoyed some success in appealing to populism in Australia. But for me, those sporadic campaigns need to be understood against the backdrop of a much more sustained sense of populism that's existed in Australia. Why has it existed and why has populism had appeal in Australia? For me, understanding Australia's European foundations provides something of an understanding about why this has occurred. As you might know, the first Europeans to arrive in significant numbers in Australia were convicts, who'd been convicted in Britain of a variety of crimes at the end of the 18th century and in the early 19th century. These were people transported from their homes against their will, feeling that the system was against them. And they arrived in Australia as prisoners, without any sense of political or economic control, people who felt that they weren't represented and didn't have rights. And this created a culture in Australian life that was ripe for the oppressed and the dominated to embrace populist feelings. So between 1788, when convicts first arrived in Australia, and 1868, when the convict system formally ended, people entered a system where they didn't feel they controlled their own lives, and they campaigned for voice and democracy to bring about change in Australian life. Two particular issues stand out as areas of campaign that we might see as reflecting populist tendencies. One was on the issue of land. When Europeans arrived, they appropriated large amounts of land from Indigenous Australians, and initially it was held in very few hands. The land, the great resource, was dominated by a few. In the second half of the 19th century, following the gold rushes, Australian workers mobilised to try and take back the land. They wanted to see it redistributed from just very few people's hands and make it available to many. Reform legislation was introduced in the 1860s to bring about that change. And we can see there a movement of populism, determination on the part of ordinary Australians to strip the wealth from the few and to ensure that all had access to land. There were very vocal campaigns to bring this about. Populist tendencies were also evident in struggles over national bounty or wealth. When the gold rushes in Australia began in the 1850s, initially it was Europeans who were seeking the precious metal. But the arrival of the Chinese in the mid-1850s and into the early 1860s brought about a struggle over who should control the wealth of Australia. Should it be a white man's country, or should it also be a place that was open to the Chinese? People campaigned on the issue of might versus right, and what we can see in Australia in the 1860s in particular is the emergence of a race-based populism that put white Australians at the heart of the Australian nation and which ostracised those who were different. It's no coincidence that more recent campaigns such as Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party have emphasised a sense of xenophobia, a fear of outsiders, and have tried to emphasise the idea of Australia as being a fundamentally white nation. One key factor to understanding populism in Australia is its geography. Australia is a vast continent that was initially a series of self-governing colonies. When Australia federated in 1901, the colonies came together and had to give up certain rights to pursue the new nation. It's true to say that populism has always taken its greatest success in those areas most remote from Sydney and Melbourne, furthest away from the major cities and the greatest areas of population concentration. And so Queensland and Western Australia, furthest from that southeastern hub, have been the places where populist movements have gathered their greatest strength. Populism in Queensland was well captured in the Queensland Premier between 1968 and 1987, a New Zealand-born politician named Joe Bjorke-Petersen. Joe Bjorke-Petersen was a Queensland peanut farmer who became known as a hillbilly dictator and who ran Queensland in an overtly populist way, setting Queensland against the rest of the nation, arguing that Queensland interests were being overlooked by other people and that only he could represent Queensland and ensure that it was protected. To the extent that the Australian Federation was a compromise, there were those outside of the main parts of the nation in the more remote areas who were determined to try and assert their rights and independence to ensure that their power was retained while Melbourne and Sydney became the predominant parts of the Commonwealth. So distance and a sense of regional grievance have been at the heart of Australia's populist tendencies. We've seen it emerge at times such as during the Great Depression, when there was talk of secession from Australia, where some regional parts of Australia said they wanted to set up their own nation and leave Australia. They were unsuccessful in doing so, but it reminds us that we ought not only to look at the present political moment in terms of understanding populism, but also at this range of influences, the historical past, the backgrounds of people, but also geography, as key factors in explaining populism in Australian life.